Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big money when you start your next project today at Menards. Check out our great selection of garage and utility lighting options. In stock, ready to take home today. We carry everything to help you illuminate whatever project you're working on. Shop garage and utility lighting products in store at your nearest Menards. You can also view all of our entire selection of lighting options today on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
7 years ago, college wrestler Damien Hurd disappeared from a party in Gunnison, Colorado.
Everyone has been drinking or whatever, the usual party scene.
When, how, and why he left are questions I need your help to understand.
Nobody's heard from him.
No, it's just like he disappeared.
From Cold Case Productions and Podcast One, Final Days on Earth, The Life and Death of Damien Hurd. I'm your host, Claire Sanima. Join me April 20th for the season premiere.
Hey, welcome everybody at Shift and Steer, and it is, spring has sprung, I guess you could say, and it makes me start thinking of car stuff. We're going to talk about some of that on the show today, and before we do that, I think Matt, who's the only one with me here today, by the way, because Aaron is off on a rally, but Matt is coming on strong because he's got two Fords behind him. And they both have bond speed wheels, so that makes
they do, fun. Yeah. Before we get started, let's get a word from our friends at Geico. You guys own your home or you rent your home, and we know that it could be a lot of work. But of course, what is easy is bundling your policies with Geico, and Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. And we know that's a good thing too, because you already have so much to do around your home already. So just go to geico.com and get a quote and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. And also welcoming back Meguiar's to the show. Hi, Meguiar's has their new line of hybrid ceramic products. And their first product is their hybrid ceramic spray wax. This is the one that's in the bright blue bottle. It's got the SiO2 hybrid technology, and it delivers a ceramic wax protection and durability beyond traditional wax. They also have their hybrid ceramic liquid wax. This is similar to their other wax, but it goes on even easier, and it seals the paint for a long-lasting protection against all of the elements. They also have now their Meguiar's ceramic wash-in wax. This is a cool product because it's two unique formulas that you mix into one bucket, and as you wash the car, it creates this added layer of protection that you'll get every time you wash the car. And of course, my favorite is I like the ceramic spray detailer. This is an easy way to just touch things up, boost that shine and that protection in between full washes and waxes. So check out the hybrid ceramic spray detailer as well. So now Meguiar's has a full hybrid ceramic solution for everybody. It's ceramic made easy. Check out Meguiar's.
Shift and Steer, racing, rides, people, and places. With your hosts, Brad Vanjore, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Well, now that we have that done, pal, we can get started. So,
you see my shop's getting full. I got stuff going on. I got an engine back there. I got a car back there. I got a truck back there, and Matt, now I guess
it's what happens to everybody. It starts empty, and before you know it, there's just not enough room.
Well, I can see that's going to happen actually really soon. It's going to happen sooner rather than later. But this week, I moved the cars over, obviously, from Adam Carolla's garage. But when I went back to do shows this week, I grabbed more of the parts and started bringing them over here so I could start working on the engine and stuff. So now that I've got the space and paying a lot of money for it, I actually have to work in here. I have to put vehicles together. Otherwise, I'm just going to be staring at it like I've been staring at it in Adam's place.
Now, is it true that Adam... you heard him saying to one of the guys over there that, why'd I get so much space? I didn't know I needed all this extra space. And they said, no, Matt just moved all his stuff out. And he went, God, we got twice the space now.
Yeah. Yeah. He's decided to sell one of his buildings now, which had I known that, I would have been like,
rent it to me for like a third of the market value.
Sell it to me for pennies on the dollar.
Yeah. Hey, I was talking about that it's spring and, you know, spring is always the time. It takes me back to when I lived in the Midwest and you would get these times because I talked to my brother-in-law because as you know, and I think we talked here on the show, the safari van that I had that was all lowered and trick paint and everything, we shipped that to Nebraska for my brother-in-law to have. And so that went on the loader. It made it there. And it's so funny because this time of year in the Midwest, you never know. It can be 80 degrees one day and sunny. And the next day there's snow on the ground. You know, I remember when I was in high school and I had my 67 Chevelle and you would get one of those days. And it was the day you went out and I had chrome steelies with snow tires on it. And it went... You would go, you take those off, you drive to school with your Kragers or whatever you had. And then, you know, a week later or by the weekend or something like that, you'd be like, oh, why'd I take the snow tires off? I'm going to need them again. You know, it was like that time of year. Then the next step, and guys in the Midwest can relate to this because you would detail your car out, you'd wash it, you'd, you know, get it all dialed in. And then one of those storms would roll through and we complain about rain out here in the West Coast, but it doesn't rain. You've been to the Midwest to shows and stuff. And when it comes down, it comes down. And if your car's outside caught in that and you're driving on the roads, they get filthy and you got to start all over again. So, so we're with you, man. We know what you're going through. So
you should use hybrid ceramic wax from Meguiar's.
You're right. Then it would just bead and fall off.
Yeah. You wouldn't even notice it. It would be like it was snowing and raining all around your car. Your car's not getting touched.
I do miss that though, man. I remember Friday nights, get off work, run down to the quarter car wash, wash the car, put the armor all on the tires, you know.
And, yeah.
Nowadays, I'd put Meguiar's on the tires. You'd get it all dialed in. And then, you know, about 9 o'clock or so, cruise down to, in my case, it was Dodge Street. And, you know, you'd go down there, you'd meet all your buddies, see what they did to their cars, what they've got, if there was anything new. And then it was funny because nobody even had to say a thing. At about 11 o'clock, half of us went this way, half of us went that way. And you know what, Matt? Everybody ended up at Abbott Drive out by the airport for some late night drag racing, you know?
Yeah, and, funny how that works.
Yeah, they just knew. But those were some good days, real simple. We didn't have to worry about, are the borders open or closed? Is there COVID? Is there, you know, are they going to take away our rights to have our muscle cars? Any of that stuff, you know, it was just simple.
Well, so now that COVID hit, more and more people are going off-roading and they're going overlanding and they're doing road trips and camping trips. And so I reached out to the friends at Toyota and said, you know, I haven't gotten a chance to get into, you know, one of your trucks now that overlanding is a big thing. So they sent me the Toyota Tacoma Pro TRD. So it's their off-road version. It looks like it's a little lifted and It's a cool looking truck. It looks good. It's in kind of that non-metallic gray.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. It's kind of just like a straight up kind of putty gray, all blacked out trim. It looks pretty good. You're talking about washing cars. Whoever had it before me really went off-roading, like really went off-roading. And before they brought it here, it was washed. So I take it out. I'm shooting some photos of it, and I open the hood, and it's just a disaster. Oh my God. It looked like it went underwater at some point, like in just mud. And if you guys are watching this, let me see if I can do a quick, now I can't do a screen share. So I'll post the photos up on my social media, but it's like the master cylinder, the entire top of the plastic on the intake, everything's just covered in mud. And I was like, that's more than just, you know, hitting some dirt roads and stuff. That's basically taking that thing down as far into the drink as you can get, into the muddy drink. But interesting vehicle. I got to say that I wanted to drive it and try to relate a little bit to people that are really big fans of overlanding and this vehicle. The Tacoma is always been popular. It was still sort of the quote unquote mini truck, if you will, as we recalled them from back in the day when all the others left the segment, right? I think we had Nissan Frontier and Tacoma, and used Tacomas were still pulling a good amount of money. Now, it was easy for me to reach out to like Ford and go, hey, send me a Raptor or a Roush, where they send me a supercharged Gen 1 Raptor. It was like a 600 horsepower version. And you're driving it, but there's a novelty to it. You're like, it's big, it's loud, it doesn't belong in the city. Like, it should totally be off-road, but everybody around here drives them. You know, there's Raptors all around the streets over here. And I don't think they ever get dirty.
Everywhere.
So, but you grab the Tacoma, the Pro TRD, and you realize, well, this is a functional vehicle, right? It doesn't really have a lot of that novelty because it's not a big, ridiculous vehicle. You know, like G-Wagon or Humvee or whatever, right? Like Raptor kind of fits into that. And then you start to realize, I do not need this vehicle at all. As I'm driving it, I was like, I get it. It's kind of cool. And I bet it's fantastic off-road. Just around town here, it's just not something that I would need. I didn't get it.
No, wait, you don't do off-road. Any serious off-roading around Santa Monica or Burbank?
Well, in my parking lot here, when I pull into my, there's two speed bumps. So,
oh yeah. Well, that,
I mean,
yeah.
I've got that. I've got that.
And every once in a while at a parking lot, you can go forward over the cement ones.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. You can. I can hit the sidewalk. I can do a few things like that. My thought was, it ran good. Maybe it's just me, but I had kind of a frustrating time figuring out what the transmission was doing, especially at lower speed. I think I just wanted it to downshift a little earlier, so I get a little bit more of that torque multiplication. I don't want to say it felt slow. It just felt like part throttle acceleration off of the stoplight was a little weak. But when you got on the gas more, it was definitely faster, but it's just, you know, when you're driving around town, there's kind of, you don't want to floor it at each stoplight. Right. But you want to be able to roll into the throttle enough that it starts to move the car and at a pace that's, let's say, above average.
Right. But you know, let me ask you this. Do you think it would be effective off road?
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Yes.
In
yes.
heavy silt or sand.
Yes, because you're in the sports cars that we drive, right? There's a lot of throttle sensitivity. Like,
yeah.
you lean on it a little bit, you lean on a little bit more, you notice differences. And I can see as you're doing low speed off-roading, and even as you're jumping around a little bit in the vehicle, if your foot is just moving because the whole truck is moving, and you're kind of not slapping your foot on the throttle and the accelerator, but just moving around as you're hitting bumps, this thing would be jerking around all over the place. And I think that's what they're kind of doing, is building that in. So when you are going off-road, you can keep a more consistent speed, have a more controllable speed by having more foot movement. You need more foot movement on the accelerator to get the truck to do stuff at lower speed. That's about the best way I can explain it. Obviously, something very different would be the supercars, like the McLarens and stuff that we've driven. But even then, when we drive those cars in the normal mode, you can move your foot a little bit like this and it doesn't do anything. But when you put it in a sport or a track mode, the slightest little bump in on the tip of your toe on the accelerator, and that car moves forward, right? So they're pulling some of that out.
Well, since you brought it up, and in relation to that, how did the McLaren perform off-road?
That's right. I did go off-roading in the McLaren. If you guys see, I probably had the dirtiest, and it wasn't just the 720, it was the 765 LT. And if you guys recall, I was invited to drive the Bronco Sport, the smaller Bronco, outside of LA, up in the mountains. But it was kind of like a campsite facility. They obviously do events and weddings and stuff there as well. I didn't realize it was like a legit mile and a half of just off-road dirt, you know, ruts in the road. And I got the McLaren nose like lifted, and I can't go over a certain speed because I'm going to lower it down and just tear up the carbon fiber. But we brought it out there. We parked it in the dirt. Everybody showed up like in a truck, and then there's 15 Bronco Sports out there, and the McLaren is just sitting there like in the weeds, like it's growing past the doors. And then as soon as we left, it was late at night. It was like 8 or 9 at night. And we just found the closest, you know, kind of do-it-yourself car wash. I don't really like to use the brush, but I just wanted to get the power washer and get through all the little nooks and crannies and through the side vents and get all the pebbles off the coolers and the radiators. And it was like, oh man, it took a minute. It took a minute for sure.
I remember when McLaren delivered that to me like about a few weeks later, and they said, yeah, sorry it took so long because we had some schmo driving on dirt roads and we had to clean this.
That's probably a true story. That's probably a true story. The greatest thing they've done was wrap that thing as much as possible.
Yeah.
You know, in the paint protection film.
That is the best thing for press cars like that, these wraps, because now they can wrap the windshields, they can do everything so that we don't destroy them. It's good for us too, because that's the last thing you want to do is go, oh, by the way, the $400,000 car I had needs a new windshield, you know? It's like,
yeah,
that's never good. But so that truck is made for the dirt, is what you're saying, and you didn't get a chance to really take it out and play with it.
Right. I mean, certainly got a chance to drive it around, and it was interesting because even with the big tires and everything, when they delivered it to me, it said it was getting 11 miles per gallon, and that seemed pretty low. So I started driving it and getting it on the freeway and not really hyper-miling it, but just certainly paying attention to the number. And on the freeway, there is a sweet spot, and it's not as low as you think. There's a sweet spot of about 65 miles an hour. And then obviously some reduced ones. And then I ended up giving the truck back at about 14.5 miles per gallon, which was better.
Yeah, it's not great for a truck, but
yeah, like what does a Raptor get? Like, you expect 11 miles per gallon. You expect exactly, a TRX to be, you know, 9 miles per gallon or something like that, right? And I just wasn't quite expecting it from that. The big tires and the amount of grip that they have, right? It's causing friction, is causing an issue. If you got a street version of the truck with a lower friction street tire, not a high performance, like summer tire, like an all season tire, I bet you would notice a difference. I'd be curious to know, to talk to like our friends at Edmunds and say, hey, have you tested the Tacoma? And then the TRD Pro, you know, the big 4x4 version.
See, I wouldn't think it would be that great of a distance just from tires, but I don't know. You never know. But
But it looked good. Everything else seemed good. I mean, certainly some plastic on the inside, quite a bit of plastic in the inside. I understand that that's more intentional. It's easy to wipe down. It's easy to clean. It had sort of the all-weather floor mats in it. So it was easy to just kind of hit it with a shop vac and clean it up. And there was room in it. It was fun to drive. It has the hood scoop that are on those hoods. Like, that's a characteristic of those. But it doesn't really stick up. They kind of lower the front, so the hood scoop kind of comes even, and the nose kind of comes down a little bit. So it really didn't cause
kind of dives. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So although you can see the hood scoop when you're driving it, it doesn't look like a ridiculous cowl induction hood or some crazy scoop on it. So
it was turned around and it scooped toward you. Listen, pal.
And then, I don't know. I just
can be horrible.
I know. I just switched it out for the very different. I went from the truck to the Volkswagen Airton, I believe it's called. It's their luxury sedan. It's like kind of a full size sedan. I've just been in it for a day. This one is the all wheel drive version, and it's their R line. It's a beautiful white. It's got kind of a black and white or black and or gray and white interior. And it looks good. Night and day difference, of course. I mean, just the touch quality, the leather. But now you're getting into a luxury sedan. It's interesting because is it a luxury sedan? Does it's as nice as any like fully equipped Honda Accord or the new Camry, which is a good looking car, but it's not. Maybe it's not quite Acura, and it's certainly not Lexus, right? But it's not quite Acura. It's maybe not quite Infiniti.
Yeah, what makes you say that, Matt?
There's something about when you get into it, and when you get into it, you say, this is a really nice equipped, maybe non-luxury brand, mainstream brand, right? And that's where you sort of get that border of, you know, let's say you pick up a Ford. They're only in SUVs pretty much right now, but you get into a Ford Explorer, like Limited or ST, and you're like, okay, it's got the full leather, it's sunroof, all the nice equipment. And then you get into the Lincoln Aviator, which is similar platform. They actually ended up making more of a difference, revised suspension, all kinds of stuff. But the interior is vastly different, right? So the car brands for a long time didn't make a huge difference. Like, you know, between Honda and Acura wasn't a huge difference. It was a few things on the interior, some styling. You remember, you know, Ford and Mercury and Lincoln and but now they're trying to take the luxury brands within the same company and make more of a difference, right? Lincoln Aviator and Explorer aren't really the same vehicle at all at this point.
Yeah, because what I'm getting at is it's not so much the name, you know, the brand, but it's that atmosphere and the materials that they use.
Well, it's the touch of the buttons, you know, it's the tension on the AC vents. It's the quality of the leather. You know, sometimes you can just get in and you just feel the quality of the leather or even the thickness of it. You can tell the stitching. And I'm saying, like, this car is very, very nice for what it is before you get into Audi, right? Which is another brand that they own. And you expect a difference between Audi and Volkswagen. Even the cheapest Audi and the nicest Volkswagen, you don't expect to be the same car. And this is what I think we've been seeing, for certainly in my opinion, is more of a difference between brands under the same parent.
Right. But one thing is that it is quite an oxymoron to say into an Audi. So it's, just had to say that.
I gotcha.
I was waiting. I got you, Brad. Waited until you were taking a drink because I wanted to see something come through your nose, but it didn't work.
Yeah, well, it wasn't that funny.
It wasn't that funny. I know.
Anyway, that's just my thoughts on Toyota.
You went out. You should have taken that thing out, you know, overlanding, because that is – I cannot believe how many people that – I'm like, what? You bought a what and you're doing what? Because there are people that I never would have imagined doing it. Producer friends of mine and stuff that – are like never even car people. Oh yeah, man, I bought a, you know, and I'm like, oh, geez. But one of the things along the line, as a car guy, the one thing you're always hoping, you know, when spring rolls around, it kind of jumps into my head that maybe I'll go somewhere or some guy will be cleaning his garage or I'll go down some mm-hmm. dirt road and there's that barn find.
Yeah.
You know, because you want to find out. I mean, barn finds are that rabbit hole that I jump down. I mean, do you ever jump down those on the internet, you know, where it's like, oh, man,
oh, yeah.
Barn find cars. And you just go, there's got to be stuff out there. I mean, there's still all kinds of stuff out there. And this time of year just seems like the time of year you would find something. What got me thinking about this was I saw an article about this car that was found in where was it? Connecticut, I think it was, and mm-hmm. it was a 40s era Mercedes SSK or a 540K or something like that, and some woman had it shipped over here just before after the war, and you know she was escaping post-war Europe, and they found it in a garage, and you know, some guy finds it, he restores it, and it sells for like $12 million at auction. You know,
wow.
it's like now he probably spent $1 million restoring it. But you know, the thing is that we always hear about these things. We hear about this, you know, oh man, this Mustang that they've been looking for with the rare option or the, you know, aluminum Camaro or, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, or everybody'd love to find like, the Porsche that the husband died and the lady, I just take it, you know, just.
Well, I mean, what if you stumbled on the James Dean 550 Porsche and you just thought it was a hunk of metal crushed and it was lawn art in someone's, you know, field outside of a barn on 200 acres of nothing, right?
You'd be exactly. like,
yeah, that bundled up piece of metal is probably worth $12-15 million.
What's amazing about it is when you see them unearthed, you know, you see the photo that they take. I saw one of a 428 Cobra Jet 69 Boss 302 Mustang. Okay, don't correct me on that. Larry Shinoda, the designer, took a Boss 302 and had him put a 428 Cobra Jet in it. And then he did these graphics that he was trying to sell the executives on. And, well, it didn't go anywhere, obviously, as we all know. But the car was rumored to be around. Yeah, they found it in a barn. And when you see this thing, it's like cockeyed up on some, you know, like they just pulled it in and parked it. The windows were down. There's chicken crap all over it. And it's filthy, dirty. But I mean, you know, you'd go in there and you'd go, look at this. Some guy took a Boss 302 and put a 428 in it, you know, and you did the research or you would think, wow, cool, a Boss 302, but you would think the wrong motor was in it, you know, and it's that kind of stuff that I'll guarantee
yeah.
growing up, I saw some rare cars that I didn't know what they were because, like, I remember a kid in my high school had this badass black 69 Camaro, mm-hmm. but we used to make fun of him because it didn't have a heater and it didn't have a radio, but it had a 427 motor. And now what I yeah. know is it was a COPO, a real, you know, Copo Camaro, but we made fun of him because yeah. he didn't have a radio or a heater, you know, and he was running around on the street. And that's the kind
what
of
a stuff. Loser.
Yeah.
Man.
Couldn't even
that
have
guy
a heater
sucks.
In Nebraska, man. Hey,
no heater in Nebraska.
No kidding.
a word from our friends at Geico. Maybe you own your home or you rent your home. Either way, it can be a lot of work. But you know what's easy? It's bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And that's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home already. Just go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you can save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Hey, what did you think about that that Concept X that Genesis put out? Did you see that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I did. I did see that. I didn't dig into the specs. It's good looking.
Well, you know what it reminded me of, and that's why I bring it up, is the 90s era 8 Series BMWs. It's like,
yeah,
take a 90s era 8 Series BMW, put a different modern front nose on it, and it's, you know, flush mounted glass and stuff like that. It's a good looking car because the 8 Series was a good looking car. And
yeah,
they're asking people if they would put a deposit of $1,000 down, you know, and it's like, okay, well, are you going to build it? What kind of motors are you going to have? What's it, you know, but it is a good looking car. It's
it is a good looking car. And this day and age, why wouldn't you put a deposit down as long as it's refundable?
Right.
Tesla built their whole company on deposits.
No kidding.
Speaking of which, you know,
I have, you
know what this also looks like when you look at this car kind of from a front three quarter view. It looks a little like the Polestar 1, which is a really pretty car. That's the,
yeah, you're right. It does have a little bit of that look.
Yeah. You know, the Polestar 1 was limited edition and the Polestar 2 was the, whatever, the $35,000-$40,000 car. But it does have a little bit of Polestar 1 in it, which is a gorgeous car. Yeah, the back, though, with that swoop in the back, I'm trying to think of what that is.
That ducktail, it looks,
yeah, but
if you squint the way, and look at just the back, it looks like a, oh my gosh.
Am I seeing some vintage Aston Martin? Is that what I'm thinking of?
There is some tail? Aston Martin, but that ducktail, yeah, makes me think of a, why is my mind going blank? I should know this, Matt. It is the Mopar sports car.
Viper.
Viper. Thank you. Jeez, am I?
Yes, that does have a little bit of Viper
tail on it there.
Yeah.
And it took me that long to come up with Viper. But you know what? There's definitely a good look here. It's going to change by the time it comes out. But if they kept those bulgy fenders that are so sexy and so good looking with some huge rubber front and rear, it'd be really cool car. So
it would be interesting. Going back a second into the off road space, right? You and I were both. Yeah, so you and I were both at Barrett Jackson, and one of the biggest charity car sales there was the right to purchase VIN number one of the Hummer EV truck, the pickup truck, right? We saw it there, which I was trying to explain to people on other shows. I can't really describe this size, but small is not the answer. It is big. Yeah, that the Hummer is big. And we heard some crazy numbers. There was a Super Bowl commercial, 1,000 horsepower, the crab walk mode, 0-60 in 3 seconds. It's just going to be nuts. And it actually was cool looking to see in person. The other charity cars that they auctioned off were pretty much cars that were already hitting the market. But because of COVID, they never had a chance to do the charity auction. So you get to go back and get VIN number one that they've been holding for those companies. But this is a forward looking car. I believe 2022 is the Hummer EV. But just recently this past week, GM announced the Hummer EV SUV. So the one we saw was the pickup truck, and the, this is the SUV. They're literally just calling it Hummer EV SUV.
And it's more what you think of when you think of the Hummer. You know, it's that big box, you know, and it's a big vehicle. But 800.
Yes. Now, this is going to be smaller than the pickup truck. So this is going to come in basically a dual motor or three motor configuration. And it's going to be 625 horsepower for the dual motor or 830 horsepower for the three motor. Now, that's not the 1,000 horsepower quoted by GM and GMC for the truck. And the reason why is it is just a smaller chassis. It's the pickup truck version has the four doors and the bed, and they gave the bed some room with a slightly extended chassis. And the battery of these trucks sits high up in the frame. I mean, low on the vehicle, but tucked in the frame because of its off-roading between the wheels. And because the SUV is physically shorter, it has a smaller battery. It's quite simple. That's it. And that's the function of horsepower. They're expecting about...
And they're saying that this is sized more. If you remember when they, before they discontinued Hummer originally, the H3, that's what they're saying. It's more sized like their H3 variant was.
They are, but we'll see, because the H3 wasn't very big and the H2 was in between. Right. And I would say the Hummer truck that we saw was pretty big. That's bigger than H2, maybe? I don't know. We'd have to pull the numbers to actually see.
But it definitely had a bigger than H2, but
yeah, it had a stance to it. It definitely had a menacing stance to it. So the EV truck will be out as a 2022 model.
Did I lose you?
No, I'm here.
Okay, I got you. I lost your volume for a second there.
The EV truck will be 2022 model, and the SUV will be a 2024 model. Range is expected to be about 250 miles, but those get dialed in kind of a little bit closer. You know, in a couple of years from now, who knows what they figured out in battery technology, you know, but it looks cool. It's going to have the same off-road capabilities. You can change the ride height. You can put power to any corner that you want because the motors are there. It doesn't have a mechanical, you know, traction lock or differential. It does it with individual motors and it simulates it when it needs to, but then it can put power individually to the wheels electronically. My question is, we haven't gotten too much into these electric cars in the aftermarket world, the SEMA show that we go to and love. You know, when you're starting to do a very capable off-road vehicle now with adjustable ride height and things like that, what does the aftermarket do with it? What does the aftermarket do with an EV platform, right? Because can you lift an EV SUV? Can you lift a Hummer when it comes out? Can you change the wheels and tire package?
Overall diameter and, you know, rolling weight, things like that, unsprung weight. How are all those things going to factor and throw off the computers?
I started to question that as well. What if you change tire size? What if you don't have just the exact diameter? Let's assume it has, I don't know, 35s. What if you want 37s?
Or 44-inch monster motors.
Yeah, if you can fit it, what does that do? You know,
questions that are out there that we don't know yet. And
I would even pose the same question to our friends at Honda. Maybe talk with Dave Merrick and go, hey, the NSX is cool. It's got the gas engine and electric motors, and they tie in together, and one kicks on with the other. But what if I modify the gas engine? Right? Like, what if I try to tune it and get an extra 30 horsepower and call it 30 horsepower and 40 pound feet of torque? What does that do to the electric motors? Does it start throwing off speed sensors? And, you know, does the car just brick itself? Does it just park and be like, no, something's wrong here? You know, like, I don't know what you're
going to limp mode or whatever. You know, you modify it thinking it's going to be better, and then it goes into limp mode. Yeah. It's, you just don't know. And those are, Those are questions we're going to have to get answered, and we're going to have to find the technology, because there's always going to be somebody that finds a workaround. It's how long does it take, and what do they need to do that? That's the question. So,
well, I mean, a big advancement in cars, what, in the 90s, 96 was OBD2, right? We plug in, there's an industry standard, we scan everything. The vehicles behind me here don't have that. Right. So, but now, but that also opened up the door for the aftermarket to say, oh, well, now we can program through OBD2. We can plug in gauges and meters. We can plug in handheld tuners and things like that. But now all these new cars that are coming out, Teslas and Mustang Mach-Es and even Corvette to some extent with over the air updates, are you going to be able to go to Diablo Sport or Jet Chip or one of the aftermarket tuners and go, hey, I want to hop up my my Mustang Mach-E, and they say, yeah, just give us your VIN number and we'll just send it over the internet, and when you wake up in the morning, your car will be updated, and then you've got more power.
SEMA's gonna have to finance a satellite, and then the aftermarket companies, and then the satellite will beam it down to your car right from the SEMA satellite, you know?
Which would be cool. We'd love to be able to do that. But as soon as Ford goes back into Mustang, they go, hey, we got to do an update. What's this other program that's installed in here? And then you go, what? I don't know what you're talking about. How'd that get there? I didn't do it. It just came from the atmosphere.
A friend of mine who worked at Tesla in the design, he posted on his Instagram this really cool photo, speaking of what you're talking about. It's this holding yard of, I don't know, hundreds of Teslas. And he's up on the building filming it. And he goes, this is a satellite download updating the software all at the same time. And as the cars are getting their software, their headlights blink, you know, and it's all these cars blinking at different times and getting their updates. And it's just so wild because you just think, yeah, this, the future's here, man. You know, it's
it is. So is Skynet. So we'll see how that pans
out. Right, Skynet. It's telling the cars to run over the humans, you know. So.
That's it. I'm pretty sure everyone died in that movie, the end of that thing, Terminator.
But it is. And these trucks will have to remain to see. And, you know, does that change the aftermarket to where it can be done, but only by the manufacturers? And, you know, but our industry has always been quite ingenious and always figures out something. When somebody says, oh, that's not going to be able to be done anymore, figure out a way to do it.
Yeah.
So that's the good thing. And we're excited.
Do you have strong opinions on EVs? I'm sure asking our audience who is listening to this. Our friend David Freiberger posted an interesting question on his social media the other day. He said, what would you rather have, a low horsepower gasoline powered vehicle or a very high horsepower all electric vehicle? Right. So, I mean, you pick the vehicle, the coolness factor, whatever you want is up to you, but that wasn't really what he was asking, right? Because you could say, oh, you know, the GMC Cyclone was a cool thing. It was fast in the day, but it's not fast by any real standards today.
Right.
You know? So I don't know.
My answer to that is as they start getting, you know, better range, like the new electric Silverado that's supposed to be coming out with a 400-mile range, that now is like, okay, I can drive to Phoenix. I can drive to Vegas, because right now when you have to stop like in Quartzsite, which is a halfway mark, and sit there for anywhere from an hour to 2 hours to recharge to get the rest of the way, that's just ridiculous. And you certainly don't want to run out of battery power somewhere out in the middle of nowhere in an off-road truck, you know? So, you know, because, you know, I think there's going to be some, you know, they're not going to have a charging station, you know, out in the middle of Johnson Valley or out in the middle of even farther back in the mountains or something. So,
it's you bring up an interesting point, because all of the car companies have been telling us through their marketing and through the media, you know, a charge at home. This is a commuter car. You don't need a lot of miles. Most people travel less than 100 miles. okay, maybe that's true, but also maybe it's because they don't have another solution. So they kind of tell you that, right?
Like, are you saying marketing?
Yes. You know, if they're trying to sell you a car that you can't charge out on the open road, so they're saying, hey, this is meant to be a commuter car. You should drive it under 100 miles and charge it at home. Because what other options do you have, right? Tesla, to their credit, has a very good, certainly the best charging infrastructure. But unless they start licensing that to other car companies, which I don't see them doing because that's a huge part of their valuation. That's one of their greatest assets, right? You know, they'd have to really be desperate for revenue to start charging a licensing fee for others to use that. But the other car companies don't have that yet. And either they build it themselves, you know, there's these other third-party companies who are trying to build it, but now it's getting competitive because it's very expensive and they're not huge companies. It's what you almost need is some version of the big petroleum companies. You need the Mobils and Shells and Exxons of the world to say, we're going to do that as well. So now, you know, at 10% of all of our gas stations, we're going to have charging stations. And then hopefully they work their way up to a bigger percentage one day. You know, but it's interesting. Anyway, it's an interesting question. Just on the fun factor.
Did you hear in Northern California what they passed? Don't hold me to it, but it was, I believe, I'm trying to remember what city it was. I'm not even going to say because I can't remember. But they passed that no new gas stations can be built. No gas stations can update. So, like, you know how every 10 years you see all the gas stations being dug up because they got to have these new filtration systems and like that?
Yeah.
You're no longer allowed to do that. So basically what they're saying is that if something comes along or if you are outdated, you can't update. Oh, but what you can do is you can add as many charging stations as you would like into your property. So what they're basically saying is that we don't want you to sell gas. We want you to sell electricity. And, you know, it's kind of scary in a way, because if we get to a point where you can't find a gas station or there's only a handful of them, that means gas is going to go through the roof. And enthusiasts like us will be stuck paying $25 a gallon for gas because you can only get it certain places or something, you know? And
yeah.
And that's now, the day I move out of California. So,
right. I mean, without getting into the specifics of that article, because I have so many questions, because if it's an EPA issue, they're saying you can't build a new gas station, but you can't update in
this
your current one.
So this municipality that did this.
Yeah. I was like, so they can't make their gas station cleaner or safer. Like, it's just going to sit there and rot away.
Well,
like, what's going to happen to the underground tank?
We're not going to give you the permit to, you know, to stay open is what it sounded like to me, Matt.
Yeah. Well, that's a different issue. I've said this before that we should have a conversation with somebody who's smarter than us about the future of EV vehicles. Oh, nearly anyone, Brad.
Okay. A California city just voted to ban new gas stations as the state eyes an all electric. Petaluma, California, federalized an amendment to ban the construction of new gas stations on Monday. I also moved to streamline the process for building EV stations. And if you go into the article, you go down, you see that they've really made it restrictive. And you are right, most people other than us.
Yeah. You know, I'm not entirely convinced that EV is the cleanest solution for the next however many 10, 20, 30, 50 years.
To generate that electricity, and how much overload will it put on the grid? That's the question nobody's answered.
And where do we put the batteries when we're done with them? Exactly. Like, we haven't even got to that yet.
Nuclear problem. You know, like, where do you put the spent nuclear energy? Where do you put the spent acid? You know, it's,
you know, and I probably mentioned this before on this show, certainly on CarCast, was, you know, there's other efforts being made. There's alternative fuels that are being developed, you know, with companies like Porsche that's testing them, and Mazda. I think Mazda was the first company to sign up for Europe's e-fuel initiative. And Porsche is saying they're gonna switch all of their cars in their motorsports categories to e-fuel, which is a clean burning fuel alternative, you know, but it is in liquid form. You know, you add it, you know, at a pump, basically. So again, I don't know enough about it, but you would think that the fuel companies would want to lean into something like that because they have the infrastructure. We have gas stations everywhere. If we took, you know, our 91, 93, 87, whatever unleaded fuels out of the gas stations and went with a clean burning fuel alternative, especially if all of our existing cars could even run on it, then it would be great. Added bonus if it's 100 octane. Yeah.
yeah, but if it doesn't work in other stuff. But like another one that boggles my mind are the Toyota hydrogen fuel cell cars.
Yeah.
Because I have a station right outside my office here, just up on the corner. And that station is a hydrogen fuel cell station in the back.
I've been there many times. There's always a line of Mirais out front, the Toyota Mirai.
Around the corner. And it's like Tuesday nights must be when they get their delivery, because Tuesday nights there is a line down the block. And I'm like, how does this make sense? You know, I just don't know. Are there that few stations? And as we're talking, I'm actually looking it up on Toyota's website to see. Now, these things get 67 miles to the gallon. Toyota gives you a $15,000 fuel credit, but there must be so few stations. And this is the problem. They come out with technology, but it's about the infrastructure. It's and a great analogy for this is we've been doing radio shows for years. I've been doing a radio show for, you know, 20 years, but we couldn't do a podcast because there wasn't the infrastructure. So we could have all the great ideas and all that, but without it, you don't have the infrastructure. And I mean, it's taking this long just download the list of stations. I need hydrogen right now. Okay. I mean, it's just the big question. Where are we going to go? What's going to become the Beta Max and what's going to become the VHS? That's, you know, one for guys our age.
Yeah. Right.
And you know, but we've got to know. It's going to be really interesting, and it looks like it popped up right now. And there might be more stations than I actually thought there were. But if I had one of those vehicles in my area, let's see what I would have to choose from. If you live in Bakersfield, you're screwed. If you live in Santa Maria, you're screwed. Pismo Beach, Santa Barbara, one station.
Yeah.
So let's look here. I live. Okay. So we're talking about hydrogen stations. There's not one in Laguna Hills. There's one in Laguna Beach. There's one in Costa Mesa, Newport Beach. And the one that's near me, believe it or not, that's really strange because the one near me, there are two of them within about a 5-mile radius. So this is the area to own one of those, I guess. But I mean, that right there, if you have a vehicle, you're not driving that vehicle out of town, obviously, because if there's only one, LA, there's all kinds of them around scattered. But if you want to drive up San Francisco, you get 67 miles to the gallon. I don't know what the capacity is, you know, you got to make it a certain ways before you can get there. So they got to solve it.
Right. But if you do find a station to fill up with, it's a few minutes. It's not 2 hours charging.
Right. But you know what? I am totally guessing here. And I would like, I'm going to go down the rabbit hole and find out later today. Is the reason those cars are around the block on Tuesday nights because when that station runs out of hydrogen fuel cell, it's not there till the next week? Because I only see a truck there, this giant truck with these canisters, pull up like once or twice a week. So, like, does the station
yeah.
run out? And then, you know, it's, you know, because you'd hate to get to Santa Barbara and go, okay, there's a station here. You pull in, they go, oh yeah, we're gonna have some more hydrogen on Tuesday. And it's Saturday afternoon. I'm on my way to San Francisco.
And yeah, I don't know how large the tank is. It seems like there's a big line of cars, but if you think about it, the rest of that gas station has a huge tank underneath it, and that tank is feeding a bunch of pumps, and there's always cars there. So,
yeah, but I've watched maybe, this truck pull up, Matt. It's got a huge box on the back, and it's like that box is exchanged. It's like they exchanged this whole thing. It was amazing. When they built that in the back, I was like, what are they building? They tore everything out, and they built a whole structure back there behind the station just for the hydrogen pump. It was amazing.
Is the tank for the hydrogen above ground, right? Isn't it in the back of the station?
Yep.
It's above ground. So they, you know, it's not the massive thing underground.
And every once in a while, you'll see a hot air balloon pull in and one that's got hydrogen, and they'll use that.
I don't think that's a good idea.
Come on.
All right. Let me just say, let's wrap it up.
Let's wrap it up on that horrible. We didn't inform anyone. We just left them all with their heads spinning. Hydrogen cars. What are they talking about?
Yeah, right.
You guys in Toyota are going, oh my God, don't ever advertise on that show our hydrogen cars, because these guys don't even know what hydrogen is. Do you know what hydrogen is?
It's a form of peanut butter.
God, I didn't think you would know that. I mean, I honestly didn't think you would know that. That was it's a chemical element with the symbol H and the atomic number of 1. With a standard atomic weight of 1.008, hydrogen is the lightest element in the periodic table. Hydrogen is the most abundant chemical substance in the universe, consisting roughly of 75% of all baryonic mass. There, now you don't know anything more than before I explained it to you.
I was going to say that exactly.
I know.
Say that you took the words right out of my mouth.
All the chemists in our audience, they were going, of course. I mean, don't they know that already?
Right.
All right. Where can we find you online, and where can they find our show?
Yes. Check us out at Shift and Steer. We appreciate that. We appreciate all the nice reviews and kind words on social media and on iTunes. You can follow me at Motorator. I'll post some pictures up of the very clean Toyota Tacoma with a very dirty engine. You'll see it up on my Instagram and Facebook.
Hey, and find me at Bradley_Fanshawe, pal. And, you know, we're going to be there. And I appreciate, I really do, all of the great stuff. Did you see that text that Aaron sent us where a guy was, he said, yeah. Hey, hell? And I've been getting it too. I love it. It's great. And everybody, thanks for listening to Shift and Steer. And don't worry, because you got to go check out not just our website, but be sure you go check out our Instagram, because you know what? People really seem to like when we see cars around the studio, around on the streets of California, we post them, and it's a real variety of stuff. So check those out. And Matt is going to start contributing to that too. I just know he is. I can feel it in my mouth.
Yeah, I'm feeling okay.
You know what?
About
what's amazing? Yeah. The Circle K by my house seems to be like just plentiful. I find more great cars at that Circle K, and it can be anything from a from a Lamborghini to just a stock VW, but there's all kinds of great stuff around there. So
you gotta walk over and take some pictures of the hydrogen gas station fueling, so we can get an idea of the tank and the structure and the Mirais that are there.
I will go interview the guy when he's there refilling it. I go, so can you tell me what the hell this is?
He'll be like, get away from me.
Yeah.
I'm busy here.
Come on, man. I just want to do my job. All right,
guys. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, pal.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.